Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in. My name is Ben. I write some videos for our website, HowStuffWorks.com. And as always,
I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Ben.
Yes, sir.
Got a question for you.
Good.
Preventative maintenance. Do you partake in preventative maintenance on a regular basis, or do you just kind of let it go? There's two. Preventative, mm-hmm. Reactive.
Oh, okay. You're talking about cars.
Cars.
Oh, good. All right.
Not body.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Car body.
Or my lava lamp collection.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, actually, I try to stay up to date on that. I do keep a little bit of a schedule, you know, and I do change my oil when it's time to change it. Mm-hmm. It bothers me if a light goes out. You know, little stuff like that. I probably could be better at some things, but I definitely do preventative maintenance because to me it's a lot easier than any kind of reactive maintenance.
And cheaper. Usually cheaper.
And cheaper. Oh, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's almost always cheaper to be on the preventative side of things than it is on the reactive side of things.
What about you, Scott?
Some things preventative, some things reactive. I'll admit, what do they say about the cobbler's kid? He has no shoes or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that. You know, the roofer, he's got holes in his roof at home, you know, whatever. Similar idea with me that right now I have two bald tires on my car. My brakes need to be repaired.
No,
my suspension is shot. I mean, totally gone.
Oh.
I probably need a clutch. I know I need a timing belt. I've got a ton of things that are just piling up. You know, it seems like week after week. This is all true, really.
Yeah.
But I do keep up on some of the other things. I keep up on the air filter. I keep up and make sure that my spark plugs are changed regularly. I do the oil changes. I make sure all the fluids are topped off.
Mm-hmm.
But some things, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's cost or just time, a lot of things slip through, and then I eventually get to them, and sometimes they have to be reactive fixes. In the case of, like, a timing belt, I'm hoping that it's not reactive because that adds about $1,000 to the bill. If it's a tire, that's bad news because, you know, it can blow out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be reactive on that. You want to be proactive on tire repair or replacement. Mm-hmm. A lot of things, I mean, you'll find that it's just cheaper for you and a lot easier when you can schedule that repair versus having to, you know, spend a day away from work or school or
mm-hmm.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
And then try to find a way to get your car from wherever it broke down to the dealership or the repair center. It just becomes a nightmare.
Yeah, having that unexpected field trip on the side of wherever your car breaks down, on the side of the road, is never, never a fun time.
I've mentioned this a couple times. I had a British car for a while.
Oh, yeah,
I had this MG. And I remember one comment that someone wrote is that, you know, you don't ever be too confident or too cocky in your British car when you're on the road, because at any point you could become a pedestrian. And that's so true, because there were a lot of points where I became just somebody standing on the side of the road,
really?
You know, trying to figure out how I'm going to fix this to get it home.
So more than once.
Exactly. And not just that car, to be fair. It was, I've had, you know, all sorts of cars, and a lot of times I end up, you know, walking to the nearest, mm-hmm. you know, service station to figure out how I'm going to get my car home.
I've got three rules that really dovetail well with this.
Okay.
Okay. First off, we have to admit, at some point, your car, whether or not you love or hate cars, will have to be repaired. And secondly, it's going to happen when you're in a hurry.
Yeah.
It never happens when you're just cruising on Sunday.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Murphy must have been an unhappy character. But the third thing is that it's going to be more expensive to do reactive stuff than to do preventative. And we've both mentioned this, but maybe a good example would be brakes, for instance. Not to get too personal on that.
Yeah, no, I fully understand.
You know what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah, I do. Brakes get increasingly expensive as time goes on. The more you put it off, the more they cost. Because you're starting to wear out hardware versus the disposable parts, which are just the pads.
Right, when you start to get to the rotors.
Oh, mine aren't nearly that bad. They're just getting worn. And I know the difference. I know that, you know, when I absolutely have to go.
Yeah.
And I probably would have done it already. See, I'm making excuses right now. You're smiling at me, but I'll make all the excuses. You know, like I should have done it this weekend, but something got in the way. You know, I had something else to do. But I do know the difference between when you absolutely have to go in and when you've got a little bit of time left. And you know, something like my timing belt, I absolutely have to go in.
Yeah,
it's better just to cough up the $400 or $500 or whatever it costs,
right?
Before you have to cough up $1,500, it just makes good economic sense.
Or before you get to the point where you just have to buy a new car.
True.
Because that can happen, especially with older cars that need extensive repairs. Sometimes, you know, what's the rule? You know, if you have a car that's worth $5,000 and you have a repair that costs, you know, $4,000, you really start to become involved with,
yeah, that's true,
with the math, and you start to look at the new car market.
Do I spend $4,000 to repair it, knowing that I will only get $5,000 out of it, maybe?
Right.
Maybe not even likely at that point.
Right, especially if it's Blue Book or something
that. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I don't know. There's a balancing game.
I have brought a list. Do you want to hear it?
I love lists. Bring it.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right. So, this is a list from carcare.org, and I'm just going to fly through it, Scott. It's a service interval schedule, because we were thinking when we were talking about this earlier that we would try to really underline how important preventative maintenance is for any vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that you should check monthly. There are things that you should check every 3 months or 3,000 miles, 6 months, 6,000 miles, 9 months, and 12 months, and so on.
Okay. That's a long list, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not going to – yeah, I know. That's everything. So I'm gonna hit some greatest hits, if you will.
Oh, okay.
Because I have some questions for you about them. So
every
month, there should be just routine cleaning, lights, checking the tire inflation and condition, which I am very bad about because it does make a huge difference, especially with the weather shifts that we have in Atlanta. But, I'm so bad about it.
Yeah, the air pressure will go up or down depending on the temperature.
Yeah.
And that kills your fuel economy.
It really does. I know I'm wrong for it.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of saying this so I can get us both to a point where we can admit our own preventative maintenance mistakes. And I'll tell you, it did cost me more money in the long run because I ended up paying more for gas and I popped a tire.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's another downside of that is that your tires are in bad condition when you corner. It kind of wears out the sidewall. That becomes hot and can be, you know, can actually explode.
Right.
So you're kind of in danger if you leave your tires at, you know, exceptionally low pressure. And you're susceptible if you hit a pothole.
Yes.
We're now getting here in Atlanta an awful lot of potholes with the weather that we've had. Other parts of the country, they're all over the place. And if you have low air pressure, you can bend a rim, which then allows air to escape through the sidewall of the tire, which is terrible news, by the way.
I agree with you, and I would like to say that I didn't know what I was doing when this happened. But the unfortunate truth is I was all too aware.
Ah, come on, make up some excuses like me.
I've got this one for you. We talked about this before. Engine oil. Every 3,000 miles? Every 3 months?
Not for me.
Not for you?
Not for me. I do it every 5.
See, you're living on the edge, man.
Yeah, I am.
You're kind of
dangerous. I feel dangerous.
That's cool. We're friends, though, so I'm fine with it.
And I'm thinking about switching to synthetic, which would extend that even more. So I'd be capable of going further because that greatly extends the time interval and the distance interval.
And to keep it on the up and up, to maintain this engine, that's a really important point, the difference in between engine oil.
Yep. You've got different life expectancies for each type of oil and even different makes of vehicle. If you check the owner's manual, they're going to tell you different service intervals for all of this stuff. But the oil change, you may find that your manufacturer recommends every 7,500 miles. Just again, check the owner's manual to make sure, but others recommend 5,000, others may recommend 5,500. It really depends on the engine that you have, you know, the stresses that it's put under, if it's a turbo engine versus a standard.
But change it.
Yeah, definitely change it. Don't let it go.
What's going to happen if you let it go?
If you let bad stuff will happen, Ben. Yeah. I don't want to go into too much because I've had this happen as well. Not my fault. This is a heat issue with a cool. It's the same thing, really.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Never
let's
mind.
Just, yeah,
okay,
let's go
moving
on.
On. Moving on.
Bad things happen to your engine when you neglect the oil.
And you guys know me, so I associate bad with being expensive.
Yeah, mine was more of a heat issue that destroyed it. But
what about power steering fluid every 6 months?
Sorry. Nope. I've never completely replaced mine.
I don't think about that. I just don't notice it unless if I had some issue. Mm-hmm. And I so very rarely do. In most places, when you take your car in for any kind of work, most mechanics will check all the fluids and take care of those automatically.
Yeah, but that's just topping them off. That's not necessarily replacing.
Right, it's not a flush or anything.
It's important to know, too, because some people think they get something serviced or topped off and that's good enough. But after a certain interval, that fluid becomes ineffective. And you need to have it removed, flushed, and replaced, or just removed and replaced. I don't know. It depends on what the system is. But like the power steering fluid that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, if you're having other work done that involves that, let's say the pump goes bad or a line goes bad, of course you're going to want to have your system flushed out and replaced with new fluid. So, you know, if it doesn't just do it itself, it doesn't just flush it onto your garage floor. But yeah, it's important to remember that you need new fluid as well, not just keep that fluid topped off. That's important in the meantime, but replace it.
Now, I don't want to go down this whole list because I think a lot of these things will be the same, and it's pretty detailed list.
Yeah.
Listeners, you guys can check it out, carcare.org. But I just wanted to see that because I hear different numbers for these things.
Okay, understood. Yeah, there's a lot of service interval type stuff that happens that people look at the cost and they assume that that's a lot of money for, you know, at 30,000 miles, you need this. At 60,000, you need that. 90,000, et cetera. There's a reason all that's in place, and that's because the manufacturer has deemed that, you know, we know that at a certain point that the rubber in that timing belt is going to begin to degrade. And based on your climate, you know, you may be in a climate that is more apt to make it degrade a little faster.
Humid, hot.
Yeah, exactly. Climate. So they err on the side of caution in saying at 60,000 we want you to do this versus you could push it to 100,000 because that's the furthest we've seen them last. But we don't recommend it because then it becomes all that much more expensive and you damage your engine.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of issues like that where you need to understand that, yeah, they're telling you to do a lot of things. And I know that, you know, a major milestone service, I don't know, like an entire service package, I guess.
It's basically a physical for your car.
Yeah, exactly. It's expensive, but if you look at what they're giving you and the value that adds to your vehicle or your driving experience, I guess, it's probably worth it.
I think so. What do you got?
Well, I had a couple things here.
All right.
Let's see. Where to begin here? Because I've had a couple cars that have killed me on reactive maintenance, but I think I've mentioned one in the past. I had an Audi A4.
Oh, you have mentioned the Audi before.
Okay. That's one where reactive maintenance got me, but I was also doing preventative maintenance along the way. It was like one thing was reactive, but along the way, and the reason I'm mentioning this again is because this one had a combination of both, and they ended up being very expensive, and that was the reason I got rid of it, is that maintenance charges killed me.
Not the cheapest car to own.
You know what? It was good for a long, long time. It got to the point where the final year I ended up paying something like $11,000 in maintenance.
Wow.
In repair, just maintenance in the final year. Not including payments and all that. It was just the maintenance. And some of that, like I said, was reactive. Some of it was preventative. So let's say that I was having some engine work done. I had a timing belt that was slipping. It had slipped a notch, which is unique. I mean, if it had slipped any more, it probably would have done a lot of damage. But so I was lucky in that case. It was loose. While I was in there, it was cheap to have them also do the head gasket at the same time because they had already torn into the car to that certain point, and it would be much cheaper for them to do, you know, a $200 head gasket job versus waiting, coming back, having them do the same amount of work to get to that point, do the head gasket job, and then, you know, build the car back up again because this was a deep repair. And a lot of things went along with that. There was also, I think there was a coolant pump that went into it as well. Just a lot of little parts along the way. But, again, these are like, this ended up costing me like $3,000 or more.
Wow.
Because I had the timing belt done. But I was also having this preventative stuff done at a relatively low cost compared to what it would have been if I'd waited 2 months and something had failed.
Yeah.
So, there's a balance. Again, like I said, balancing act. You just have to decide what's it worth to you. And then, of course, the rest were just, you know, after I'm hit with that, the rest were mostly reactive.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you get overtaken by events.
But,
you know?
And this is where this ties in. So I'm going somewhere with this.
Tie it together.
All right. Let's see. How do I want to begin this? Because the same shop that I used to take my Audi to, one day, this is a German automotive place. They had a Ferrari Testarossa in the lot one day when I was there. And I was intrigued by that because here's an Italian motor, right?
Yeah.
In a German motors place. So I asked him a little bit about it, and he was telling me that it was just in for routine service, and he told me what that entailed. And this happened a long time ago, but and I don't have the numbers straight on this, so I'm going to let that go for now. But just keep that in the back of your mind.
All right.
So this weekend, things that I see around town. You know,
things Scott sees.
Yeah, things I see.
Stuff Scott sees, I think we said.
There's a Ferrari dealership not far from my house, a few miles, and I was driving by, and what caught my eye was a Ferrari Testarossa. Pretty rare to see it. This dealership has all new Ferraris and, you know, Maseratis, things like that. They're all parked outside, beautiful cars. They had this older Testarossa parked outside, which you don't see, you know, very often anymore. Not all that often. So I thought it was interesting. You know, I just kind of made mental note of it that it was there and went on my way. It had been there for a couple of days, so I'm guessing it was in for maintenance. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Looked in good shape. All right. I know this is a winding story.
No,
here we go. I picked up Automobile magazine the other day. This is the third part of the story. This is where it all comes together.
This is the trilogy.
Promise me. I promise you, rather. Not promise me. So I'm going to read this article about the top 10 Porsches of all time, right?
Yeah.
I get sidetracked because there's a photo of a Ferrari Testarossa.
This thing is like following you around.
Exactly. I'm thinking this is strange. You know, I see this here. So, and you don't see that again very often. So I looked at that article first, and it was about driving and maintaining a Ferrari Testarossa, which I thought was fitting for what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
See, it's coming together.
It is.
And this article, besides all the other interesting information that it had together, it had some of the preventative maintenance that you have to do if you own a Ferrari.
Oh, let me know.
This is a 1990 Ferrari Testarossa, and this article is by Jason Camisa, I think is his name.
Camisa.
Yeah,
okay.
If I blew that, that's okay. I mean,
sorry, Mr. Camisa.
Yeah, exactly. But it was an Automobile magazine, the March 2010 issue. You can look it up if you want. But and don't think it's too outlandish for me to be talking about this car. It's an expensive car, don't get me wrong. It's a Ferrari. But the original price in 1986 was $102,000. It's now down to you can buy a used Testarossa for around $35,000 to $60,000.
Really? That's much less than I would have thought.
Puts it in the range of a, you know, if you're going to buy a toy like this.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad.
However, there's a price point, and I noticed this when I was looking at used ones online just because I was interested.
Yeah.
There's around a 30,000-mile mark where there's a definite price difference in this, and that's why the range goes from 35 to 60, I believe. The ones that are on the top end of this have had this 30,000-mile service. And I guess it's every 30,000 miles. And there's a minor service in between as well. But the 30,000 service involves changing the timing belts. And the timing belts in a Ferrari Testarossa, remember, this is a mid-mounted 12-cylinder engine that has 48 valves.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it might be a little complicated.
It's complicated, to say the least. It involves taking the engine out of the vehicle.
What? Really?
Exactly. And when I remember back to that – see, here we go again. German Motors.
Yeah.
When he said that he had the car in there for routine maintenance, he told me that he was doing something with the engine. It was just routine maintenance. But I believe – and I'm again, sketchy memory here. But I think he told me that he had to take all of the bodywork off of the vehicle to remove the engine in order to do the timing belt service. That may or may not be true. I don't know if he could drop it down below. I think he said it was just easier in his case because he had the setup for it.
Yeah.
To take the bodywork completely off of the car. There were four or five points that he had to release to do this. It wasn't a big deal, really, according to him.
Right.
You can take the bodywork right off the thing, take the engine out, repair the thing, and then put it all back together again. So that's a routine maintenance, and that's done at 30,000 miles on a Ferrari.
Every 30,000.
On a Testarossa. Now, I know someone's going to, you know, say that's not true. You don't have to do that, but that's what I'm getting is this 30,000 mark, or every 5 years, either one that comes first because, you know, part degradation.
That's like the recommended benchmark.
Exactly. Now that's a major service, and I've seen a lot lower end on this that's right around $3,000 for that service. Guess what the high end of
this
is. Yeah, you want to guess the high end of this?
No. $6,000.
Pretty good guess. Pretty good guess. Right around $8,000 is what you'll pay to have the engine taken out, seals, all, you know, all that stuff taken care of at the same time.
I wish I would pay $8,000.
All these timing belts replaced, I guess. I think there are four timing belts, I believe. So anyways, you're paying $8,000 every 5 years or 30,000 miles, which isn't really that often. I know you just drive it on the weekends or whatever.
Right.
In between that, there's also a minor service that costs about half that much. So in between the $30,000, there's another minor service that's right around $4,000. But they say that if you don't do that, if you don't do the major service at the scheduled time, if you do break a timing belt while you're driving or the engine's running, and it hits the valves, which is the danger in any car.
Yeah.
Almost any car. You will, and this is the author's quote, it will cost about as much as a small Midwestern house.
To fix it?
Yeah, to fix it.
But
I don't know what that means exactly. A small Midwestern house, I mean, what do you put that at?
$50,000? $60,000? It really also depends on what the house price are.
Exactly, but that gives you an idea that this thing is it's an expensive repair if you don't do the preventative maintenance. Now, that's an extreme case, but you get the point.
And it carries down all the way down to our Monte Carlos and stuff.
Exactly. I told you about mine. It's like about $600 to do it on my own. If I wait, it could cost me as much as $1,000 more than that for a valve job.
Let's see. Word to the wise, you guys. Yeah, I really, I have to say, I became a convert to the discipline of preventative maintenance when I really had to start taking care of a car myself, you know, when I wasn't just borrowing the family car. Because it's easy to just say, I'll just change the oil. My parents won't know.
Sure.
Yeah, but it's definitely, it's worth the time. It's worth, a little bit of inconvenience, right?
If
you don't like cars. If you like cars, then, you should be hanging out with us under the hood every weekend or something. Hang out with your car.
Go in the garage. Spend some time with it.
Yeah.
Become friends.
Become friends.
That's right.
We have some listener mail from some friends.
All right, Ben. So we have a note here from a listener named Katie.
Okay.
And Katie, we're guessing Katie is possibly from Ohio, you say, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that just based on the area code from the phone number that she gave here. We don't have any other information. But Katie, here we go. She says, I'm sort of a fan of the show. That's how she starts out.
That's awesome. We're sort of really glad.
I'm sort of a fan of the show. I listened to your Driving Pet Peeves podcast, and I had to comment on the last pet peeve. Cars not at the front of the line at the red light trying to move even when the cars in front of them don't move. So in other words, remember I said don't honk your horn immediately.
Right.
Everybody can't move all at one time. It takes progression.
Yes.
Number one, number two, number three has to go, et cetera.
Yes, I remember that.
Katie says she has to respond to this because she's the driver that's at the back honking, I guess.
Oh, wow.
She is the one that says, I don't understand why every car doesn't immediately start moving when the light turns green. If you're behind the wheel, your focus should be on driving. That's it. What else are you doing at the red light? As soon as the light turns green, everybody in that line needs to keep going. I'm paraphrasing now at this point, but she says that, what are they doing? Why is there a delay? Why is everybody not moving except me?
That's pretty fair, that point about everyone should be focused on driving.
I agree with that, but then, sorry, Katie, this is making my blood boil a little bit here, because this is honking the horn at the back of the line does no good because everybody can't simultaneously move. It just doesn't work like that. And I understand it's frustrating to wait for the delay that, like we just said, car one has to go, car two has to go, car three has to go. And by the time it gets back to the sixth car in line, the delay may be 20 seconds. And then, of course, you may be the next one caught at the red light, depending on how long it is. It's frustrating, I know, but that's just the way things work, and that's the way you cannot all be in at once unless you're, if you're looking at the beginning of a Formula One race.
Right.
Everybody goes at once right when the red light starts, and that's the way it works. Races often start that way if it's a dead standstill. Look at Formula One film. That's the way they all start.
The reason that I can say I see what she's saying, and I also see your point as well, because obviously people aren't professional drivers. And obviously,
people are going to be from out of town or unfamiliar with the territory, or mm-hmm. as Katie pointed out, they're not going to be paying attention.
Yeah.
But there is also, there has to be that delay as people are accelerating and waiting to accelerate, you know, to, what is it, two objects cannot occupy yeah. the same space
yeah, exactly.
at once?
Yeah, exactly, because let's say that you're in a, I don't know, Honda Civic like mine.
Right.
And the car in front of you is a Model T, Ford okay. Model T. My car is likely going to be able to accelerate a little bit quicker than that Model T or get rolling
sure.
a little bit faster. You don't know what speed that vehicle in front of you is going to be going. Those are true, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an extreme example.
Or like those older diesel cars, even, that take a long time.
Yeah, exactly. The older ones that take a long time to get yeah. to get started, you know, to get yeah. rolling. Yeah, you're going to find that everybody has a different different rate that they're comfortable leaving that, mm-hmm. that stoplight at. And not only that, you want to leave a little bit of space in between. That's important. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Katie, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that I'm sort of on the fence with you guys on this, because I would like to defend myself, though. If I ever take too long getting a move on at the green light, it's usually in Atlanta, it's usually because somebody is not all the way in or out of a lane they're supposed to be in, and I have to wait for that brilliant gentleman to figure out if he's going to go left or not. You know, it's a pretty important decision to him.
I see.
Oh, and we'll do that thing where they swing out to the right into the other lane when they're going to take a left.
We're adding more pet peeves.
Yeah,
all
who
the time.
Are they? I'm just saying, who are they, Scott? Who do they think they are?
It's okay if you're wrong most of the time, Ben.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah, that's it. I'm sorry. Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But I understand Katie's point of view here.
Yeah.
I really do. I get it, but there's just a reason that everybody can't accelerate away from a light mm-hmm. at the exact same time. It just doesn't work that way. So I don't mean to, you know, be sarcastic about it or whatever. I really don't. But it just cannot work that way. It will not work that way. And everybody would have to be on a track and space the exact same way. That's the only way it could work. Like if it was like a roller coaster situation
yeah.
where everybody's cars are connected together or connected to a track. You know, like these driverless roads that we talk about sometimes.
That might, yeah, maybe
but
one day.
That's about the only way that would ever happen. If you have these vehicles that are capable of still bumping into each other, it's just not going to happen.
Man, we got to get out of here now.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time. Sorry about the blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I'm sorry about the blah, blah, blah. Hopefully the listeners aren't. Hopefully they enjoyed it. And on the off chance that you did, why don't you guys send us an email with a suggestion for an upcoming topic? Maybe if you have a preventative maintenance horror story or a story with a happy ending, we'd love to hear it. As always, our email address is
highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.